Washington's Crossing of the Delaware River. From Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, at en.wikipedia.org. Washington's Crossing of the Delaware River, which occurred on December the 25th, 1776, during the American Revolutionary War, was the first move in a surprise attack organized by George Washington against the Hessian forces in Trenton, New Jersey. Planned in partial secrecy, Washington led a column of Continental Army troops across the icy Delaware River in a logistically challenging and potentially dangerous operation. Other planned crossings in support of the operation were either called off or ineffective, but this did not prevent Washington from successfully surprising and defeating the troops of Yeoman Rawl, quartered in Trenton. The army crossed the river back to Pennsylvania, this time burdened by prisoners and military stores taken as a result of the battle. Washington's army then crossed the river a third time at the end of the year, under conditions made more difficult by the uncertain thickness of the ice on the river. They defeated British reinforcements under Lord Cornwallis on January 2, 1777, and defeated his rearguard at Princeton, before retreating to winter quarters in Morristown, New Jersey. Contents. This article has 13 sections. Section 1. Background. Section 2. Washington's Army. Section 3. Planning the attack. Section 4. Watercraft. Section 5. Crossing. Section 6. Attack. Section 7. Return to Pennsylvania. Section 8, Third Crossing. Section 9, Legacy. Section 10, See Also. Section 11, Notes. Section 12, References. Section 13, External Links. Section 1, Background. While 1776 had begun well for the American cause, with the evacuation of British troops from Boston in March, the defence of New York City had gone quite poorly. British General William Howe had landed troops on Long Island in August and had pushed George Washington's Continental Army completely out of New York by mid-November, when he captured the remaining troops on Manhattan. Howe then sent troops under the command of Charles Cornwallis across the Hudson River into New Jersey and chased Washington across New Jersey. Washington's army was shrinking due to expiring enlistments and desertions, and suffered from poor morale due to the defeats in the New York area. Most of Washington's army crossed the Delaware River into Pennsylvania, north of Trenton, New Jersey, and destroyed or moved to the western shore all boats for miles in both directions. Howe and Cornwallis, rather than attempting to immediately chase Washington further, established a chain of outposts from New Brunswick to Burlington, including ones at Bordentown and Trenton, and ordered his troops into winter quarters. Section 2. Washington's Army. Washington encamped the army near McConkie's Ferry, not far from the crossing site. While Washington at first took quarters across the river from Trenton, he moved on December the 15th to the house of William Keith to be closer to the army. When Washington's army first arrived at McConkie's Ferry, he had 4,000 to 6,000 men, although 1,700 soldiers were unfit for duty and needed hospital care. In the retreat across New Jersey, Washington had lost precious supplies, as well as losing contact with two important divisions of his army. General Horatio Gates was in the Hudson River Valley, and General Charles Lee was in western New Jersey with 2,000 men. Washington had ordered both generals to join him, but Gates was delayed by heavy snows en route, and Lee, who did not have a high opinion of Washington, delayed following repeated orders, preferring to remain on the British flank near Morristown, New Jersey. Washington had additional problems, including the fact that the enlistments of many of his men were expiring. The series of lost battles and the retreat from New York had left morale very low in Philadelphia, where many residents and the Second Continental Congress fled to the South. Many soldiers were inclined to leave the army once their commission was finished, and several had taken the opportunity to desert the army before their enlistments were up. Orders were issued to bring supplies to the camp, and men were dispatched to recruit new soldiers, who did slowly begin to arrive at the camp. Militia recruiting in both New Jersey and Pennsylvania was also successful. Spurred on by British and Hessian mistreatment of New Jersey's residents, morale was given a boost on December the 19th by the publication of a new pamphlet by Thomas Paine. Common sense had served to increase support for the revolution in its early days, and Paine's new pamphlet, titled The American Crisis, began with words well known to American school children. Quote, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of his country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of a man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph." End quote. Within a few days of its publication in Philadelphia, General Washington ordered it to be read to his troops. While Paine's writing could not feed or shelter the troops, it did serve to improve morale and help them feel a little more tolerant of their current conditions. Some provisions, including much-needed blankets, arrived in the Continental Army camp on Christmas Eve. On December the 20th, an event took place that gave another boost to morale. General Lee's division of 2,000 arrived in camp under the command of General John Sullivan. General Lee had been captured by the British on December the 12th. When he ventured too far outside the protection of his troops in search of more comfortable lodgings, or, according to rumours, an assignation. Later that same day, General Gates' division arrived in camp, reduced to 600 by ending enlistments and the need to keep the northern frontier secure. Soon after, another 1,000 militia men from Philadelphia, under Colonel John Cadwallader, joined Washington. As a result of these reinforcements and smaller numbers of volunteers from the local area, Washington now had 6,000 listed as fit for duty. Of this number, a large portion were detailed to guard the ferries at Bristol and New Hope, Pennsylvania. Another group was placed to protect supplies at Newtown, Pennsylvania, and to guard the sick and wounded who would remain behind when the army crossed the Delaware River. This left Washington with about 2,400 men able to take offensive action against the Hessian and British troops in central New Jersey. This section contains an image with the caption, "First page of Paine's The American Crisis." Section 3, Planning the Attack. General Washington had been considering some sort of bold move since arriving in Pennsylvania. With the arrival of Sullivan's and Gates' forces and the influx of militia companies, he felt the time was finally right for some sort of action. He first considered an attack on the southernmost British positions near Mount Holly, where a militia force had gathered. He sent his adjutant, Joseph Reed, to meet with Samuel Griffin, the militia commander. Reed arrived in Mount Holly on December the 22nd, found Griffin to be ill and his men in relatively poor condition, but willing to make some sort of diversion. This they did with the Battle of Ironworks Hill the next day, drawing the Hessians at Bordentown far enough south that they would be unable to come to the assistance of the Trenton garrison. The intelligence gathered by Reed and others led Washington to abandon the idea of attacking for Mount Holly, preferring instead to target the Trenton garrison. He announced this decision to his staff on December the 23rd, saying the attack would take place just before daybreak on December the 26th. Washington's plan was for three crossings with his troops, the largest contingent, to lead the attack on Trenton. A second column under Lieutenant Colonel John Cadwallader was to cross at Dunk's Ferry, near Bristol, Pennsylvania, and create a diversion to the south. A third column, under Brigadier General James Ewing, was to cross at Trenton Ferry, and hold the bridge across the Assunpink Creek, just south of Trenton, in order to prevent the enemy's escape by that route. Once Trenton was secure, the combined army would move against the British posts in Princeton and New Brunswick. A fourth crossing, by men provided by General Israel Putnam, to assist Cadwallader, was dropped after Putnam indicated that he did not have enough men fit for the operation. Preparations for the attack began on December the 23rd. On December the 24th, the boats used to bring the army across the Delaware from New Jersey were brought down from Malta Island near New Hope and hidden behind Taylor Island at McConkie's Ferry, Washington's planned crossing site, and security was tightened there. A final planning meeting took place that day with all the general officers present. General orders were issued by Washington on December the 25th, outlining plans for the operation. This section is accompanied by an image with the caption, "Depiction of the Crossing by Thomas Sully, 1819. Section 4. Watercraft. A wide variety of watercraft were assembled for the crossing, primarily through the work of militiamen from the surrounding counties in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and the assistance of the Pennsylvania Navy. In addition to the large ferry vessels, which were big enough to carry large coaches and likely served for carrying horses and artillery during the crossing, a large number of Durham boats were used to transport soldiers across the river. These boats were designed to carry heavy loads from the Durham Ironworks, featured high sides and a shallow draft, and could be poled across the river. The boats were operated by experienced watermen. Most prominent among them were the men of John Glover's Marblehead Regiment, a company of experienced seamen from Marblehead, Massachusetts. These men were joined by seamen, dock workers and shipbuilders from Philadelphia, as well as local ferry operators and boatsmen who knew the river well. This section is accompanied by an image with the caption, "Reenactors across the river at Durham Boats." Section 5. Crossing. On Christmas Day, Washington ordered his army to prepare 3 days' food and issued orders that every soldier be fitted with fresh flints for their muskets. He was also somewhat worried by intelligence reports that the British were planning their own crossing once the Delaware was frozen over. At 4 p.m, Washington's army turned out for its evening parade, where the troops were issued ammunition, and even the officers and musicians were ordered to carry muskets. They were told that they were departing on a secret mission. Marching 8 abreast in close formations, and ordered to be quiet as possible, they left the camp for McConkie's Ferry. Washington's plan required the crossing to begin as soon as it was dark enough conceal their movements on the river, but most of the troops did not reach the crossing point until about 6 p.m, about 90 minutes after sunset.
The weather got progressively worse, turned from drizzle to rain to sleet and snow. It blew a hurricane, recalled one soldier.
Washington had given charge of the crossing logistics to his chief of artillery, the portly Henry Knox. In addition to crossing the large number of troops, most of whom could not swim, he had to safely cross 18 pieces of artillery and the horses to move them. Knox wrote that the river crossing was accomplished with almost infinite difficulty, and that it was most significant danger was floating ice in the river. One observer noted that the whole operation might well have failed, but for the stentorian lungs of Colonel Knox. Washington was among the first of the troops to cross, going with Virginia troops led by General Adam Stephen. These troops formed a sentry line around the landing area in New Jersey, with strict instructions that no one was to pass through. The password was victory or death. The rest of the army crossed without significant incident, although a few men, including Delaware's Colonel John Haslett, fell into the water. The two other crossings fared less well. Treacherous water and ice jams on the river stopped General Ewing from even attempting a crossing below Trenton. Colonel Cadwallader, crossed a significant portion of his men to New Jersey, but when he found that he could not get his artillery across the river, he recalled his men from New Jersey, when he received word about Washington's victory. He crossed his men over again, but he retreated when he found out that Washington had not stayed in New Jersey. This section is accompanied by two images, the first with the caption Henry Knox, and the second with the caption Map Showing Washington's Movements Leading Up to the Battle of Trenton. Section 6. Attack. As soon as the army was ready, Washington ordered it split into two columns, one under the command of himself and General Greene, the second under General Sullivan. The Sullivan column would take River Road from Bear Tavern to Trenton, while Washington's column would follow Pennington Road, a parallel route that lay a few miles inland from the river. Only 3 Americans were killed and 6 wounded, while 22 Hessians were killed and 98 wounded. The Americans captured 1,000 prisoners and seized muskets, powder, and artillery. Section 7. Return to Pennsylvania. Following the battle, Washington had to execute a second crossing that was in some ways more difficult than the first. In the aftermath of the battle, the Hessian supplies had been plundered and, in spite of Washington's explicit orders for its destruction, casks of rum were opened, so some of the celebrating troops got drunk, probably contributing to the larger number of troops that had been pulled from the icy waters on the return crossing. They also had to transport the large number of prisoners across the river while keeping them under guard. One American acting as a guard on one of the crossings observed that the Hessians, who were standing in knee-deep ice water, were so cold that their underjaws quivered like an aspen leaf. Section 8. Third Crossing. In a war council on December the 27th, Washington learned that all of the British and Hessian forces had withdrawn as far north as Princeton, something Cadwallader had learned when his militia company crossed the river that morning. In his letter, Cadwallader proposed that the British could be driven entirely from the area, magnifying the victory. After much debate, the council decided on action and planned a third crossing for December the 29th. On December the 28th, it snowed, but the weather cleared that night and it became bitter cold. As this effort involved most of the army, 8 crossing points were used. At some of them, the ice had frozen 2 to 3 inches thick and was capable of supporting soldiers who crossed the ice on foot. At other crossings, the conditions were so bad that the attempts were abandoned for the day. It was New Year's Eve before the army and all of its baggage were back in New Jersey. This was somewhat fortunate, as the enlistment period of John Glover's regiment, along with a significant number of others, was expiring at the end of the year, and many of these men, including most of Glover's, wanted to go home, with a lucrative privateering trade awaiting them. Only by offering a bounty to be paid immediately from congressional coffers in Philadelphia did a significant number of men agree to stay with the army for another 6 weeks. Washington then adopted a fortified position just south of the Assunpink Creek, across the creek from Trenton. In this position, he successfully beat back one assault on January 2, 1777, which he followed up with a decisive victory at Princeton the next day. In the following days, the British withdrew to New Brunswick, and the Continental Army entered winter quarters in Morristown, New Jersey. This section is accompanied by an image bearing the caption, Statue of John Glover in Boston. Section 9. Legacy. At the time of the crossing, Washington's army included a significant number of people who played important roles in the formation and early days of the United States of America. These included future President James Monroe, future Chief Justice of the United States John Marshall, Alexander Hamilton, a future Secretary of the Treasury, and Arthur St. Clair, who later served as President of the Continental Congress and Governor of the Northwest Territory. Both sides of the Delaware River where the crossing took place have been preserved in an area designated as the Washington's Crossing National Historic Landmark. In this district, Washington Crossing Historic Park in Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania, preserves the area in Pennsylvania, and Washington Crossing State Park marks the New Jersey side. The two areas are connected by the Washington Crossing Bridge. In 1851, the artist Emanuel Lutz created the painting called Washington Crossing the Delaware, an idealized but historically inaccurate portrayal of the crossing. Fictional portrayals in film of the crossing have also been made, with perhaps the most notable recent one being The Crossing, a 2000 television movie starring Jeff Daniels as George Washington. The 19th episode of the PBS miniseries Liberty's Kids, entitled Across the Delaware, chronicles the part of the crossing, beginning with the report and escape of Washington's spy John Honeyman, and showing events up to the re-enlistment of most of the army after their supplies are restored, and a footnote is made by the character Sarah Phillips of Washington's follow-up attack, where the army delayed its retreat to capture the now ill-defended British garrison at Princeton, New Jersey. The episode makes one minor historical error. Footage of the Hessians' Christmas celebration depicts soldiers dancing to Silent Night, at least 40 years before the carol was written. This section is accompanied by an image bearing the caption, McConkie's Bury Inn, the tavern that Washington and his crew visited prior to the crossing. Section 10. See also. This section suggests further Wikipedia articles you may like to see. 1. Prince Whipple. According to legend, Prince Whipple accompanied General Whipple and George Washington in the crossing of the Delaware River. Some believe that Whipple is the black man portrayed fending off ice with an oar at Washington's knee in the painting Washington Crossing the Delaware. 2. Washington Crossing the Delaware, Sonnet. Section 11. Notes. This article is accompanied by detailed footnotes. Section 12. References. There are references available in the written form of this article. Please be sure to verify information found on Wikipedia using the references provided or by cross-referencing from the information yourself. Section 13. External links. In addition to the above, several external links have been listed for finding additional information online. At the end of this article, there is a link to Wikimedia Commons that has related media to Washington's crossing of the Delaware River. Now we have come to an end to the article Washington's Crossing of the Delaware River. This sound file and all text in the article are licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 Unported License, available at creativecommons.org.